Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, June 12th, 2016, and this is show number 579. Well, before I forget, tomorrow I would love it if you could join Steve and me in the chat room during Apple's WWDC keynote. If you haven't been there to the chat room before, just go over to podfeet.com/live and follow the instructions on how to chat. There's a little box there that you can do it live right in the webpage. Now, there will be no video of me, so ignore the video on that page, unless you want to watch the live recording from Sunday that I'm recording right now, if I get myself in a loop. Anyway, so when you go there, you can just play in the chat room and ignore the other stuff. If you'd like to use a real chat client, there are links to some tutorials from Kirsten Sia and me on a few that we like. If you've already got a chat client, the server is irc.borgchat.net, and the room is hashtag NoSillaCast. Was that pound NoSillaCast? My kids say I sound old when I say pound. Anyway, we really hope to see you guys there. It is at 10 a.m. Pacific time, so hope to see a bunch of people in the live chat room. That would be really fun. We like to get in there and get snarky and talk about what's going on. Well, this week on Chit Chat Across the Pond, Bart and I had a blast doing Programming by Stealth. I had just such a good time. Last week, I asked him if maybe we could have homework because we weren't getting any practice. He gave us an assignment, and I was delighted and very proud of my little self that I got my program working almost like I wanted it to work. It was close. It was pretty close. I started it, of course, the night before, just like when I was in college. Anyway, he did have a few suggestions for improvement, but he allowed me to declare victory. I wish we'd had homework all along, but I bet there are those listening who think I'm teacher's pet for asking for it. Anyway, Bart added some huge enhancements to his tutorials for Programming by Stealth. First, he added a series index to each tutorial page. This allows you to jump back and forth between lessons when you need to review some material. He did this using a plugin for WordPress called Organize Series. He spent some time styling it in CSS so it looks good on his site as well. The second thing that he did was to create a cheat sheet. So instead of having to read back through all the tutorials, you can see the syntax for different things in order by the episode in which he explains them. This week, he explained how JavaScript callbacks work and introduced the idea of anonymous functions, which oddly made perfect sense to me. I'm sure Bart finds it wildly entertaining trying to figure out when I'll get hopelessly lost and when I'll be just fine with the topic. You've heard me talking a lot about Affinity Photo, and if you've been thinking about trying it, part one of my video tutorial is up on Screencast Online all about Affinity Photo. In this one, and I'm really, really proud of how well it came out, I walk you through how each of the extensions for Apple Photos works. The next one will be the full Affinity Photo, but for now, this is a great way to get started, get your toes wet, and start to use Affinity Photo as the extensions. I put a link in the show notes to the ScreencastOnline.com webpage where you can see the video. By the way, Don's podcast is a subscription podcast that does cost money. Well worth it. If you read the reviews, man, you just know this. You just get so much training for so little money. But anyway, if you want to give it a try, there's a free 14-day trial for Screencast Online, so you don't have to pay anything to go listen to the first one. Anyway, actually, you can watch as many as you want within the first 14 days, and it gives you access to the whole back catalog. So anyway, go check it out over at ScreencastOnline.com. I also wanted to take a quick moment to remind you that when you go shopping at Amazon, if you just manage to stop by podfeet.com first and click on the Amazon image, a small percentage of what you spend will go to help fund the show. As you know, I don't have any advertising going right now. I'm kind of picky about who I endorse. So the show is entirely funded by your use of the Amazon affiliate links right now. When Marianne was here, we were looking at some of the purchases made by people using the affiliate links. Remember, we can't see who buys what, so you can still buy those adult diapers or whatever you need. And anyway, she noticed that the single biggest percentage that the show gets comes from home and garden stuff. Like if you're buying a barbecue or maybe a nice cover for your barbecue or some fertilizer, some lawn instruments there. Anyway, start over with podfeet.com and click on that Amazon affiliate link and you'll really be helping out the show. Remember, I don't use any tracking cookies, anything like that. All it is an image that's a link that takes you right over to Amazon. Oh, and don't forget that Father's Day is next weekend, so do your holiday shopping now through Amazon. All right, let's get started in the show, and I'm going to play a couple of interviews this week from a thing we went to, that Steve and I went to, called PhotoCon LA. It was kind of a small show, but had some really terrific booths. We only did three interviews, but a couple of these are really cool, and I want to start out with the one with Olympus.
I'm in the Olympus booth with Ray Acevedo, and I am a very recent Olympus convert. Came over from Nikon, and I was curious what kind of cool stuff you guys have at the show here today at Photocon LA.
Well, we have everything in our lineup, but we are also showing our two most latest products, and one is our Pen F camera, our beautiful rangefinder design mirrorless camera.
Let me stop you real quick, because I've always wondered what the difference was between like the OMD series and a pen, and I don't know what it actually means to be a pen in Olympus land.
Sure, obviously a lot of similarities, but fundamentally the OMD class of camera, the ones that resemble the SLR style, you have a prism or a viewfinder that is directly in axis with the lens line. A rangefinder style, by history, if you will, always has the viewfinder off to the far left, and allowing a user to very easily look through the viewfinder but have a free eye that's able to see the scene and anticipate what's coming in and out of the frame.
Now, both of these viewfinders, though, are looking right at the sensor, so you're not getting an off-axis problem, right?
No, definitely not, and it's not like the film rangefinders that did have that issue, if you will.
So this is just a personal preference, which you would rather use?
Yeah, in different styles. You know, the rangefinder historically is the street shooter's camera, and allowing them to just roam around and very quickly grab shots and be less obvious as to what they're doing.
So would you be more likely to use prime lenses with a Pen F pen camera?
Absolutely. And we have a number of them, five in our lineup, and very fast primes. So yes, in this case I have a 17mm 1.8 lens, which is an equivalent 34. So it's the classic view for street shooting.
Very, very good. It looks a little more retro, too, right?
Absolutely, and that's by design. We had a film camera 40 or almost 50 years ago now that was called the Pen F, and it was a system camera, interchangeable lens camera, which shot half-frame film, but it looked very, very similar to this.
Okay, cool. So how much does the Pen F run?
The Pen F for the body is $1,199. And again, you mix and match lenses, lots of deals on lenses as well.
Yeah, one of the reasons I did go with Olympus is because there are a lot of options, not just from Olympus, but also from third parties and other companies we won't mention, but yeah. It gives you more flexibility.
Yeah, Olympus was, at the origin of the mirrorless category of cameras, and so we've had a long head start in this category. And as you said, there are 60-plus lenses out there in the market available for it.
Well, speaking of lenses, you have a giant beast in your hands now. What are you showing us here?
Yeah, and this rounds out our lens lineup beautifully. And this is our fixed focal length 300mm f4 lens. Olympus calls this the highest resolution lens we've ever made. And this gives you an equivalent 600mm at f4.
And holy cow, and this thing is, what is that, 10 inches long, 8 inches?
That's a great question. I haven't measured. It's about 11 or so.
It's big, but it's not big like you'd expect a 600 to be.
Exactly. Relative to the traditional SLR lenses, this is a fraction of the size and weight and cost.
Now, you've got it hooked up to, is this the OMD EM5?
This is the EM1 camera, and I often have it attached to this because it has the bigger built-in grip. And it's a manageable package, if you will.
You got to let me hold that in my hands for a second. Can you trust me? I just want to see what it weighs.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Holy cow. Yeah, that's not light, but dang.
The lens itself is 2.7 pounds. The camera is about a pound.
I'm going to hand that back before I drop it because I don't want to buy a broken one.
But yeah, incredibly fast focusing and sharp lens, and it also focuses as close as 45 inches from the front element, which is amazing.
Wow, for that size of lens. So you'd be picking up the eyeball of the eagle on this one.
We could do that.
All right, how much did you say this costs?
This is right at $2,500.
And on an SLR type lens like that, what would that cost you?
About $12,000.
Holy cow. So that makes it sound pretty reasonable.
Plus hand holding, because with this camera and a couple of others, we've got as much as 6 stops of stabilization available.
Wow. Well, this is really cool. I wish you guys the best of luck. And like I said, a very happy Olympus camera owner.
Well, that's great. Thank you. We appreciate it.
All right. Now I want to give a shout out to Ananda Sims of the Olympus Google Plus community that I'm a member of. And hi, guys.
We'll come back to Photocon LA in just a minute, but I wanted to do an intermission and talk about something completely different. After a couple of weeks with Apple and Google doing two-factor authentication, I thought I should give you an update on how things were going. After the initial huge pain from Google that I whined quite a bit about, and the very mild pain from adding two-factor authentication from Apple, they both settled down, and I haven't been challenged for an authorization code in the last couple of weeks at all. Now that I'm over the hump, I have to admit that Bart was right when he said, once you have it set up, it doesn't bother you very often at all. Now, Bart also explained something about 12 times till I actually got it through my thick head, and it kind of helped me understand one vital piece. Remember, I kept saying that I didn't understand how some devices, like my MacBook, were allowed to get into the tools even though I had only authorized my iPhone? Well, I kept thinking that the device that was receiving the codes was the authorized device. Bart explained that the device receiving the code is just receiving the codes, nothing more than that. They're not authorized at all. Once you log in on a new device, after receiving the code, say from your iPhone, that new device is the one that got authorized. Now, I know that sounds so obvious when I try to say it out loud, and some large percentage of you are laughing at me for not getting this immediately, but I figure there's at least a few of you out there that would have been as confused as I was. Like I said, now that I understand this, it makes a lot more sense how this stuff works. Well, I was emboldened enough by the lack of prompting by Apple and Google that I decided to turn on two-factor authentication with my two banks. In both cases, I am always challenged to enter a code when I log into the sites, even on those that I've told are my trusted computers. Now, you'd be surprised to hear me say that I'm really, really glad about that. This isn't my email I'm protecting or my Facebook credentials. This is my money. Since I have all of my devices set to receive text messages directly at my phone number, I can be on any device, and when I ask to log in, I'll see the SMS with the code to enter those gates. It's a wonderful thing, actually, and I feel quite silly for not having done this any sooner. Now, another question I had was if I'm sitting there on my iPad and I get that text message on my iPad telling me the code, then how is this secure? But remember, those are trusted devices now. So you wouldn't be getting the code on somebody else's iPad. You'd only get it on this iPad. Anyway, I hope I didn't talk any of you out of doing two-factor authentication because of how annoying it was to enable it and how much I whined about it. I knew at the time that sharing my experience was risky because it could dissuade some of you from doing the right thing to protect yourselves. But I figured I only had two other options. I just couldn't bring myself to either not tell you how I felt about it, or worse yet, claim, oh, it's not that bad, it was easy. But Google really was that bad. Apple was pretty easy considering how many devices I have, and I have to say, my banks were immediately no trouble at all. I was even able to set it up for Steve through the website. I turned it on and said, here's his phone number, and he immediately went in, and it was no trouble at all. So if you've been putting this off, set aside some time and jump in and do the two-factor authentication thing on the things that you really care about online. All right, let's get back to Photocon LA.
I had to stop and see the Kenko Takino booth because they've got a monopod here that is so light. I told the guy it felt like when I lift up a beer glass and it's actually too light and you throw the beer over your head. But anyway, I've cornered Michael Burnham here to talk to me about it.
Sure. Yeah, this is the Pro 382 CFL carbon fiber tripod. Very simple to use. Four leg sections, three locks. So there you go. That folds it right up. Real simple. Unfolding it, just as easy. And what it does, it weighs less than 12 ounces.
12 ounces. And how tall is this?
This goes up to, I believe this is 60 inches.
Wow.
So you can get a camera right at eye level. the day even before you put a head on it. You can put a head on it if you want. And just a super lightweight, very high quality carbon fiber made in a slick factory. It's not made in a subcontractor or anything like that. So this is a slick, all slick design, patent pending on their leg grasps. So
now you get something. Normally, the smaller the bikini, the more it costs. The lighter the tripod, the more it costs, right?
Absolutely.
How much is this?
This one's right now at the show today. This is going for $85. Normally, it sells for about $110.
Still, that's a crazy price.
It's a crazy price for a carbon fiber tripod, yeah, because this is not regular metal here. This is actually something that they had to mix together, carbon elements, put it together in a furnace to make the tubing, all that.
Wow. So this is just beautiful. So that's the coolest practical thing, but now we're going to switch over to something impractical for my audience, but it's just so fun. We got to go talk to it. So what we're looking at here to those on the audio audience are giant bubble-looking things with bright colors in the background and GoPro mounts on top, and I do not understand what these things even are.
Okay, what these are for is you see all the surf footage or surf photos where it's like shot within the barrel. So what this is what they use.
Oh, so when you see
those surf photos where the wave is coming right up over the camera, this is what the photographer has.
I mean, this looks like something out of a movie in the 1960s about going underwater, doesn't it?
It does. But what it is Aquatech underwater housings are designed specifically for that type of surf photography. And they have, you have different backs, so you have a lot of control over the camera. You have a lot of control over your camera while it's in the housing still.
Holy cow. So what kind of camera do you put in this?
This one is specifically for the Nikon. This back in the shape for the Nikon D4. They have one for a D5, of course, and then also on the Canon side, the D1X, and the other cameras. This is for the big guys. And, of course, they have a variety of housings. This is all waterproof. It's good to a depth of one atmosphere. So it's why they refer to it as a sport housing and not an underwater housing.
Okay, so this is not your scuba diving housing.
No, this is not a scuba diving housing.
Even though it looks like my head would fit in it.
It does, doesn't it?
Well, now, the one on top's got a GoPro mounted on the top. What the heck?
You can put this on any one of the houses. What it is photographers like to do is while they're shooting stills, of course, you know, you have like a 24 or 36 megapixel camera in there. They also like to do shots. They get GoPro shots of video of the waves crashing over them, things like that. So it's kind of doing double duty. This is just running video of what they're going through while they're shooting the still photos.
Now, this will be just for the comedy because I don't think my audience would buy these, but how much does one of these cost?
Oh, this is actually a full set. Let's say you want this whole thing, which would be the housing, the back, port, and this runs about $2,000.
Oh, that's not as bad as I thought.
They can run up to $2,500 depending on what port configuration you have. And they have different gears, so you can zoom a lens in here, right there. Your shutter button is here. They also have a pistol grip here, which is on this one. This pistol grip gives you two buttons. One is for focus, and the other is for shooting. Is for taking the picture.
Plus, it can double as a helmet that you can wear for Halloween.
That too.
All right. Thank you very much, Michael. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, I did end up buying one of these monopods for Steve from. Actually, the manufacturer is Slick, but the booth was Tokina. It was kind of confusing. But anyway, we did buy one of those monopods, and Steve really, really likes it. But I wanted to correct the guy I was talking to because he said it weighed under 12 ounces. It turns out with the threaded piece on top, it's about, 19 ounces. And when we took that off, it was 16.8. But Steve still really, really loves it. It's really easy to open and close. It's very light and it's fantastic. But I did want to make sure that you guys knew it wasn't 12 ounces, probably closer to 16 or 17 ounces. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Security Bits with Bart Bouchatz, which for some people is their favorite part of the show. You should be on more often. Bart.
Hello.
Personally, I wish he'd do it every week because I'd have to do a lot less work, but it's all donation time.
More. Yeah, I was going to say, I have podcasts of my own.
I know. And you know what would happen is you do just as many long shows as you do for this one bit. It wouldn't be like you could do half one week and the other half the next week. That's not what would happen, right?
No, it's not what would happen because security stories expand to fill all available space. So what happens is that my filter for what gets thrown in the suggested reading shifts.
Would change. Yeah, I thought cutting my shows in half wouldn't be more work. That was a good one. Well, before we dig into your notes, I wanted to bring up two things. The audience will have already heard me say that I have begrudgingly admitted that, okay, two-factor authentication isn't that bad. It's actually not irritating me at all right now. So I wanted to officially allow you to say I told you so.
Well, good. I'm delighted because it does add a lot of safety. So I've also been eating my own dog food. So I had already two-factor authored a whole bunch of stuff about 2 years ago, I think. I went through like a phase. But then since you were doing it again, I was like, well, okay, how many more services I use now have two-factor auth that didn't have it 2 years ago when I last did a splurge of this? So I've been doing some more two-factor auths. And I'm happy to say that Dropbox do it very nicely. They give you the choice of an authenticator code or an SMS. And the authenticator codes in 1Password are so nice. That's such a nice integration.
Yeah. I haven't done that yet. We should talk about that more sometime. But
Well, I'll explain very briefly. So I went into Dropbox. I clicked on I'd like to set up two-factor auth. It put up a little code. So I went into 1Password, went to my Dropbox, clicked to add a new thing and told it it was a one-time code. And then it put a little thing on my screen to take a screenshot of the barcode. And then I just dragged that over the barcode that was showing on the Dropbox webpage. It went click, and that was it. Done.
Yeah, I did learn how to do that through Dom McAllister did a fantastic job showing that in the latest version of 1Password on Screencast Online. Another reason you should subscribe. But I'm so angry that nobody I've tried to set it up with has allowed me to do that, that it makes me mad. That's why I didn't want to talk about it.
Well, I can give you two. I can tell you that hover.com do that for if you want to put two-factor auth in your domains, which is a good thing to do because
you don't like hover.
Okay, well, I do. But they do the authenticator code, and Dropbox do the authenticator code.
Maybe I'll do Dropbox just so I can use the authenticator code. But anyway, I've been doing it on text messages, and what's nice about that is all of my devices have iMessage set up to send me text messages to my phone number. So if I'm on my iPad or I'm on my Mac, I will see the code. I don't even have to go get my phone. So it works out pretty easily. Yeah. It's right there on screen and it's, you know, 6 or 8 digits. It's pretty nice. So it, I do have to begrudgingly admit that yes, it isn't that bad. And I've turned it on a bunch more things. So thank you for pushing me and letting me whine about it.
Well, hopefully people will realize that, yeah, it is a little bit of work up front, but once you've put the work in, it does get better.
Yeah. Yeah. Google, pain in the tuchus, but Apple.
Especially for someone like you who's sharing accounts and you're doing a lot of Googling.
Yeah. And Apple, no big deal at all. Yes. I mean, it was trivial. It was a piece of cake. Just to
bear in mind, this is Apple's second attempt at doing two-factor auth. Apple's first attempt at two-factor auth was a gigantic pain in the you know what.
Okay. All right. Good. The other thing I want to bring up was James Earl Ford sent us an email that he received that was about a scam on two-factor authentication. And it was a way of tricking you into using two-factor authentication to actually hurt yourself. But let me read what the two things they did, and then maybe you can respond to what we should think about this. Number one was using usernames and passwords from the massive databases with tens of millions of stolen credentials that have surfaced in the last few weeks, notably from LinkedIn, MySpace, and Twitter. They sent a phishing scam email with a malicious attachment, which installs a keylogger and sends the credentials back to the hacker. So then they send you a fake spoofed text message that looks like it's from the company you have an account with, claiming your account may have been hacked. And then it sends you a verification code that looks like two-factor authentication.
Then you run over, you go log in, and then the keylogger catches you. I guess that's the theory.
Yeah. So there's two pieces to this. You had the first point.
Right. So if you've kept patched and kept safe, well, then the stuff in your email shouldn't just auto-run. So you shouldn't be able to just get hacked by receiving an email. And if you do receive an email which contains an executable attachment, don't go run it yourself then. So getting infected with malware bit shouldn't work against you.
Right. If you've been following the basic tenets of security bits, right? Stay patched.
Yeah.
Don't
stay
click
secure.
Attachments and emails. Don't then enter your authentication, right? Your credentials to log into your machine to give it root access. The other piece of this is this is a perfect example of don't click and respond to things that you didn't expect to come to you. Your bank is not going to send you an email and tell you to log in. They're not going to send you a link and tell you to fake this thing. That's not the way it's going to, that's not what they're ever going to do. And even if, let's say you have a dumb bank, still don't do it. I've gotten emails from reputable companies where I've just looked at it. I've hovered. It's the right kind of link. It's going to the right kind of place. And I still don't click it because I know I can always just go over to the web and just type in the address and go in on my own. Just don't do it ever.
Yeah.
So
well, the thing is, if you receive something that looks like a two-factor auth that you didn't trigger, that actually should set off alarm bells because that does mean that someone is probably trying to get into your account. So the fact that they're doing it fraudulently, that bit is actually quite clever. It's the first bit is the issue.
Right.
The, you know, getting infected with malware. That's where you can nip this cycle in the bud. Just don't get infected with the malware. And then then it all breaks down, right? Then there's no keylogger. It just all falls apart from there.
Yep. All right. Now we can kick into security bits.
Now, I do want, there's a slight caveat on these show notes. These were correct as of Friday evening Irish time. And then I ended up being very busy and I actually cycled up a mountain today, which was fun. Two mountains, actually. I decided to do two peaks.
Tell people about your streak.
Okay, so today is day 65 of a perfect calorie burn streak on my Apple Watch. So my daily target is 1,000 calories, and I have met it now perfectly for 65 days, including today, and I'm almost certain to break it tomorrow because of the keynote.
Wow.
That 65 days is nice, right? And that's 1,000 calories a day, so that's a lot going on.
Now, it probably wasn't 1,000 that whole 65 days, was it? Didn't it increase over time because you kept meeting?
It was increasing. So way back 65 days ago, it started at about 850 and then it's been creeping up. And then it might start at about 650, but it's been high for most of the 65 days.
So people think I'm a nutty exercise freak because I work out about an hour and 45 minutes a day. But my goal is 600 and I don't always meet it 7 days in a row. So
if you went cycling for that amount of time, if you're cycling, you burn off about 500 an hour. So if you went cycling, you'd easily do that.
Yeah, I'd probably cycle too slow and I'm a woman. There's a whole lot of things in there, but it is not to be discounted at all. That is an astonishing goal. And it was the Apple Watch that's really inspired you to do it, right?
Oh yeah, because I've never been a fan of this idea of counting calories because it always sounded a bit like mumbo jumbo to me. But the watch is actually measuring. It's scientific. It's accurate. It's real. It's, you know, reading my pulses, reading my movement. There's something going on. I believe it. I trust that it's at least within 10% accurate, which is pretty darn good. And now I have another app that is measuring my calories by just me scanning barcodes and it telling me what's in it. And so now I can actually just see the two. It's like, so this much coming in, this much going out. And now I feel like I'm in control. I feel like I'm in charge.
Yeah. Yeah, a friend of mine's a trainer. She always says, just think about it like a budget. You don't spend more than you earn. Why would you eat more than you burn? And the only way you know the answer to that is if you count it. That's
fantastic. The thing is, before a smartphone and a smartwatch, the counting was a pain in the backside, which is what always turned me off. But the other thing is, you end up with these bizarre metrics in your head. Like, I don't think 230 calories. I think a Mars bar. Our Mars bars are smaller than yours. And so I might say, I'm going out for 3 Mars bars worth of exercise.
Well, using that kind of logic, when I'm counting calories, I don't have gin and tonics on Friday. I have martinis. Because that tonic is not worth it.
Oh, dear. I'm actually pleasantly surprised that wine is a lot less calories than beer. So.
Well,
a civilized person's glass of wine is 144.
Uh-huh.
Actually, in a civilized
beer is about the same.
Yeah, but it's twice. Yeah, okay.
You get more volume.
I don't know. Somehow, two glasses of wine, I feel like that's the evening sorted.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas 2 glasses of beer, I don't. Anyway, that's security.
All right. Yes. So security preamble is over. Let's start.
Yes. Okay. So. There may be stuff has happened since Friday. It won't be in these show notes, but we'll catch it next time. So, security updates. There's only one that caught my eye that is important from a security point of view, and that is that Apple have fixed the update for the 9.7-inch iPad. So, 9.7-inch iPad Pro owners can now go to iOS 3.9. Sorry, 9.3.2. So, everyone else was there last time we talked, but now the 9.7-inch iPad Pros can join the club. Apple have fixed whatever problem there was there.
Good.
There was actually an update to airports, but it wasn't a security update. It was just a feature update. So that's not one that gets to go here.
Well, that was an interesting one, because I was just sitting here looking at my Airport Extreme. I was like, why has it got an amber light on? I thought, well, that's really weird. So I restarted it. And apparently that was the firmware update.
Yeah, I'm surprised the airport utility didn't pop up on one of your Macs. That's what happened on my iMac. It just sort of popped up. It went, your
and
airport
is
updating.
Sometimes my airport does not show up under the airport utility, and I have to restart it. So I did that. I looked at that. Well, I wonder what's wrong with it. And I turned it on. It didn't show up. I was like, something's wrong with it. Restarted it. But then I started reading why it was happening. And then my father-in-law sent me a message going, hey, there's an amber light on. I said, yeah, unplug it, plug it back in. You'll be happy. So that worked. It catches people's attention, probably even better than a pop-up.
Possibly, actually. And that it's interesting that no other Wi-Fi device I've ever owned has been so in your face about it. Yeah, I need your attention. Look at me.
Yeah.
Okay, so important security news. The FBI is asking that the U.S. Senate amend the email privacy bill we said all of those nice things about a few weeks ago. And they say that they would like, so in April, this bill passed the House of Representatives unanimously, which we all thought meant that it was probably going to make it through the Senate. And now the FBI wanted amended on its way through the Senate. And they say it's to fix a typo, which will allow warrantless access to browsing histories. Now, I don't buy this whole, it's just a typo line. No, you just want more power, matey. So
just
I don't know what's going to happen.
Basic distrust?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay.
The bill
I'm not saying that's invalid.
Good.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I don't trust him at all anymore. But not because of something specific, but just because that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, so they basically think that they should be able to get at everyone's browsing histories warrantlessly. I'm sorry, but there's the whole point of having multiple branches of government is that one is a check on the other. This notion of I'd like a free pass doesn't float with me. Yeah. Executive branch should speak to judicial branch when trying to get at our stuff. Anyway, so I don't know what's going to happen because you have a bunch of senators trying to wedge it in and a bunch of senators trying to pull it out. And there's amendments going in and amendments going out. So I guess when they finally agree what they're going to vote on, I guess we'll know what happens. But it's just interesting that the FBI are still trying to, you know, snatch defeat from the jaws of victory or whatever. If you supported Governor Scott Walker in his bid to become U.S. president, you should now be cranky because he did not succeed. He did not get the nomination along with 16 others. However, to make his money back, he is selling his list of email addresses and stuff of people who donated to him. So basically, if you were kind enough to support him, he has now sold you.
Are you
so
serious?
Isn't that charming? I am deadly serious. Yeah. It's like, well, okay, never supporting him again. Not that I did.
Wow. But it says it's not just Walker's donors up for grabs. The company he's selling them to, Granite List, sells other Republican candidates' donor lists, including the contact information for people it described as the patriotic and politically active responsive direct mail donors to often multiple times to Mitt Romney because they believe in America.
Grr. Anyway. Facebook are now officially doing what we all think they've been doing forever, which is tracking non-logged in users and non-Facebook users on using their advertising platform. So they now say, yeah, we're doing it. It's real. So anywhere you see a Facebook like button, it's tracking you.
Hmm.
Which I guess is slightly more visible than the double click cookie, which is entirely invisible. So, you know, 'cause they're no worse than Google.
But it's not like you can actively avoid those being on pages you go to.
No, you need to have some sort of plug-in that just stops trackers.
You know, I did put those on for a little while, and then it just looked trashy to me. I don't care if you push like or not.
Well, it's just seeing the like is enough to track you.
Yeah.
So any page that has a like button, Facebook can see that you're there. And they can associate that with every other like button you've ever seen, ever.
And by
and tie you together that
it's
way.
Your IP address, right?
No, it's a cookie. So it's not just your IP address. So if it can tell the difference between me and anyone else in my house, as long as we're not using the same browser. It's using cookies.
Right, but it doesn't know it's you.
But it knows it's the same person, so it gives me an alias.
Okay.
Know, customer number 5,032,000. Uh-huh. And then when I show up on another page, so let's say I got from 9to5 Mac and I saw a like button there, and then I've gone on to New Scientist, and then there's a like button there, and then I've gone on to, I don't know, wherever else, and there's a like button there. It can trace it all together and say this is the same me, and it won't get confused by someone else in my house
Okay.
browsing on their computer.
But it doesn't know it's Bart Bouchat's.
Unless I do something where it can figure it out. If I go to my own Twitter or something, I don't know.
Hmm. Okay.
I'm sure it's kind of scary how much they can pull together here quickly.
Yeah.
Frightening me. So, but anyway, so everyone's always accused Facebook of doing it. Now they're saying, yeah, we're doing it. So that's probably better, to be honest, that it's honest. Hmm. The U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. finds that police do not need a warrant to request location data. I don't like this judgment, but that is what the U.S. Fourth Circuit of Appeals has found. Thanks to new provisions in the USA Freedom Act, which is a stripped down and sort of slightly improved version of the Patriot Act, and I mean improved from our point of view rather than from the FBI's point of view. Gag orders on national security letters now expire when the case involved is resolved or when it's no longer an issue of national security, which means that we're going to start to get a view into what these national security letters are actually used for. And the first company to give us this kind of a view is Yahoo, who had some national security letters that became 3 years old. They asked the FBI if those cases were now closed or no longer of national security interest, and they were told that they either were closed or no longer of national security importance. Therefore, Yahoo had the right to publish the letters, which they did. So this means that this is shining a light on something that has always been invisible. So from now on, whenever anyone is sending a national security letter, they will know that in 3 years' time, this is probably going to become public, so let's not get carried away with ourselves.
Yeah, okay,
yeah. Good. So this is a nice compromise. So it means that at the time it stays secret, but in the long run it doesn't stay secret, so abuses will come out. So that's probably a way to balance this notion of, well, we can't tell a terrorist that we're spying on them, because that obviously wouldn't work. But at the same time, we can't give one branch of government infinite power, so this might work. This might work, and it's nice to see Yahoo are publishing. So it's good to see. A damning report shows how security carelessness by the top PC manufacturers, not including Apple, just to be very clear here, leaves users vulnerable to man-in-the-middle attacks. So basically, when you buy a machine from Lenovo or any of these companies and you turn it on, it uses a whole bunch of APIs to go fetch drivers from Lenovo's website and all these kind of things, and there's mechanisms in Windows to allow these vendors to inject all this stuff, and the vendors invariably do so insecurely. They don't use HTTPS, so you can inject your own malware. They don't check signatures of things that come back down to make sure they weren't interfered with. Basically, a man in the middle, if you take a brand new computer that's not a Mac and you plug it in Starbucks or whatever, everyone else in Starbucks could probably run any software they want on your PC.
Wow.
Because they just
does not include Chromebooks.
Probably not. Thanks.
So I see Acer, Asus, Dell, HP, Lenovo. So yeah. The big dukers.
The big dukers. And the fact that these people can't do simple things like use HTTPS to download software, check digital signatures on what you get back from the servers. I mean, this is such trivially basic stuff. It's just carelessness not to bother your backside doing basic security. Like, it's really quite disgraceful. So I guess it's good to
see. Apple, just because Apple's not on this list, do we know that it's not, they don't do this?
Yeah, because the App Store does things securely, and that's the mechanism Apple use.
Oh, okay. Oh, right.
Yeah. So, you know, Apple is secure on these things. Hmm. A PSA for owners of Lenovo. So Lenovo owners get to do that bad news twice today. Lenovo are recommending that users uninstall the Lenovo Accelerator application, which they bundle with a whole bunch of Lenovo computers because it contains a remote code execution bug that they have not patched. So the official advice from Lenovo is to remove it.
Yikes.
A PSA for WordPress users. There is a WordPress plugin called WP Mobile Detector. You need to uninstall that. If you have that installed, you need to uninstall that ASAP. There is a zero-day exploit, that is to say, a bug that for which there is still no patch, or at least there wasn't at the time of writing. And it is being actively attacked in the wild to hack people's blogs. So if you have that plugin, you're probably already hacked, to be perfectly honest, but you should disable it now and then have a very good look around to make sure nothing unexpected is going on in your WordPress. So it's called WP Mobile Detector.
Yikes. I just checked the link and it is, they haven't added anything to say update, it's been fixed or anything like that. So it's still true as of Sunday.
Yeah, and Ars Technica are generally pretty darn good about updating their stories.
Yeah.
Which is what the link in the show notes is. Okay. Notable breaches. This is, I guess it's, there's some not so bad news at the end of this, but most of it is, of course, bad news. So we talked about a breach in Wendy's a few security bits ago. And at the time, we were saying that the good news was it was only about 5% of stores affected. Turns out that was wrong. Now, we don't know what percentage of Wendy's stores are affected, but what we do know is that the number of stores affected is, quote, significantly higher. And the bit that makes me scary is that the intrusion may not yet be contained. In other words, you could be having your card stolen today if you use it in Wendy's, which is a lovely thought.
Wow.
If you decide not to go to Wendy's and go to CC's Pizza, well, they appear to have been breached as well. Then we've had another one of these mega password dumps. 642 million of them, this time from MySpace, Tumblr, and something called Fling, which is some sort of dating site I'm not familiar with.
So the MySpace one is to me, one of the most interesting because if you have a MySpace account, or let me put it differently, if you had a MySpace account,
yeah.
There's a reasonable probability that you're still using the same email address you used back in 2007 when you got that account. And if you you are guaranteed to have had a bad password, no matter how smart you are, if you had a 5-digit yeah. password that was your birthday or your middle name or something ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. If you have not gone through the security check with your password manager that I'm sure all NoSilla Castaways are using by now, if you haven't run the password check, go do that right now, because there's a reasonable chance that you just forgot about an account that's out there that has that same username and password from back then.
And what you really, really, really want to hope is that the one that has the same password is not your email account. So, because they're going to have your email address. And so if you use that same password, if your email is with Yahoo or Google or whatever, and if you use the same password in LinkedIn as you used with Google or Yahoo, then you are in really big trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you can't handle the concept of having a different password for everything, have a different password for your email than for anything.
Yeah.
At the very least, do that.
Right, right, right.
Okay, now this splurge, this is yet another mega breach to add to another, we had so many of these mega breaches in the news recently, it's just not funny. So all of these mega breaches existing has collateral damage. So there are, it looks like, so Twitter, there was reports that Twitter were hacked, but it seems almost certain that Twitter were not hacked. What's actually happening is that people are trying the passwords from the other breaches and finding a lot of people have reused their passwords. And so you're finding 30 million. So of the 642 million passwords in this breach, plus all the millions in the other breach, there's 32 million that work on Twitter. They're finding these kind of things. So initially the report was 32 million Twitter accounts hacked, but Twitter were very quick to say, no. This didn't come from us. This is password reuse. So this is coming from one of the other breaches. There's also been a spate of hacks of TeamViewer, where people have reported that they have been using their computer with TeamViewer turned on, and all of a sudden someone is using their computer instead of them and buying things on eBay and all this kind of stuff as them, which is terribly bad. But again, TeamViewer are pretty darn sure they haven't been hacked. They're pretty sure this is password reuse. Dropbox then got slimed, I think, by a crowd basically saying, no, there's been a Dropbox breach, and Dropbox, no, there pretty well hasn't. Yet again, this is almost certainly these passwords being reused from these other breaches. And then also there's an article on Ars Technica that caught my eye, where there's a researcher who does password cracking as his security research, and he says that even if none of your passwords are included in these breaches, all of our passwords are less secure, because what these kind of breaches do is they give attackers the kind of information they can only dream of. They can start to do statistical analysis of the most common words people use in passwords and all these kind of things, which makes everyone who's not using a truly random password much less secure, because it allows them to calculate the human factor.
Right.
And certain things, if you let humans pick, it's not random, it's based on our subconscious. If you have a big enough sample, you get to discover which words show up again and again and again and again and again and what patterns there are. So if you're using something like XKPassWD, there's no human factor there. So you're not going to fall victim in the same way. But if you make up strong passwords, your password just became less strong because of all the statistical data now available.
Yeah.
Because you are a human.
Back on the Twitter one, I thought I had heard that some people with two-factor authentication on their Twitter accounts got hacked.
That was TeamViewer, and that has not been corroborated.
Okay. I could have sworn it was on Twitter as well, but...
Okay, well, I haven't read it about Twitter. I read it about TeamViewer. Okay. So what you'll notice is both the Twitter story and the TeamViewer story don't have one link in the show notes. They have three each, because it's a whole bunch of he said, she said.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Everyone seems to agree that the most probable answer is that this is coming from these massive amounts of password breaches. And if you think about it, this is exactly what you would expect to happen. If hundreds of millions of passwords were leaked, you would expect to find collateral damage all over the internet as people just try.
Yeah.
Let's see if the same combination works.
Yeah. Just looking at it. Nope. I thought I found an article that said it was Twitter as well. I'll keep looking. If I find it, I will back you up.
Okay. Well, anyway, so, these things have this kind of a side effect, that you have lots of sites appearing to have password problems, but in actual fact, it's just people checking. And so much password reuse on this planet, it's a very lucrative way of getting into things. Just try password from the breach. Even if the breaches are years old, it still works. So that then takes us to suggested reading. The first one I have in suggested reading, I moved down to suggested reading because it's one you initially brought to my attention. And it definitely sounds really bad. So there's a security researcher who said that it's possible that Facebook is listening to absolutely everything you say and is targeting ads at you based on what you say around your phone. But Facebook have just come out and said no. Yeah, it's one thing to say this is possible, but no, this is not what we're actually doing. AdWords are not based on what you say. Right, so they have a feature which you have to turn on to say, listen to what I'm watching on television, and then you can automatically Facebook about it, because you don't have to type in that you're listening to Game of Thrones. It'll just know you're listening to Game of Thrones, and then you have a little button you can push to say, talk about Game of Thrones. Seems like a silly feature to me, but yeah, who am I to judge?
That sounds kind of cool. I didn't know
okay.
that.
So basically, this security researcher turned that feature on, had a chat with people about a certain topic, and then noticed that when she went to look, as she surfed the web, there were then ads about that topic appearing. And she said, well, maybe this is because I mentioned it around my phone. But it could also be because she searched for it the week before.
Okay.
So Facebook have come out and said, no, we are not doing this. So either they're lying or they're not doing it.
Okay. So that explains something. What I read was it was simply allowing Facebook access to the microphone, which you need if you're going to do a live video, for example.
Mm. Yeah, so Facebook clarified that they only use the microphone when you do something that explicitly needs the microphone, which means recording some sort of voice thing or doing some sort of voice call, because obviously how can you do a voice call without voice? And it also means this feature where it will try to detect what you're listening to on television, and you push a button, it detects, and then it'll give you an answer. So it's a bit like Shazamming the television.
But they're saying even with that, it still wouldn't do it?
It will only listen when you actually engage the feature.
Okay.
And even then, it never uses anything that comes from the microphone to do AdWords.
So that makes sense. Lindsay was who sent me this, my daughter Lindsay. And so we did an experiment in the car when we were on vacation where we turned on the microphone on her phone for Facebook. We didn't engage the microphone, but she just opened up Facebook. And then we talked constantly about Mini Coopers, which is something she would have never searched for, never had it on there, and she never got an ad.
Okay, well, that's a nice negative result.
Yeah, not necessarily proof, but we were trying to get it to do it. So this makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. So assuming Facebook aren't flat out lying, which I think is a fair, usually, like, companies will say nothing rather than lie.
Right.
Yeah. So, it'll be in what they didn't say. But in this case, they just flat out said, no, this is not what we do. So I think it's probably not a big scandal, so I've popped it down to suggested reading.
See previous story where Facebook claimed they weren't tracking non-users.
Yeah, possibly. Anyway, the article and the rebuttal are both in the show notes, so people can make up their own mind.
Okay.
An interesting study that I think is worth mentioning, even if it's in suggested reading, is that some security researchers basically investigated how good we are at spotting bad passwords, and we're muggles, normal users, not just techie people, are much better at it than we would have thought. However, we're all still fooled by a few simple things. So it's a really interesting read, actually, just to spot, the things that you might catch you out. So the stuff that looks like it's good and random, but it's actually like, you know, bashing a row of keys on the keyboard and like a password cracker will go clean through that. Hmm. But humans didn't spot them as weak passwords, even though they were. But on the whole, humans are better at spotting weak passwords than most people give them credit for.
Interesting. One of the things in the list of things respondents knew passwords were more secure when you use random digit. Wait, where was it? Place digits and symbols in the middle rather than the end. Why would that matter?
Yeah, so this is the kind of stuff that comes out of research done by looking at these massive breaches, right? So a lot of people will say, my password is donkey. Ah, what do you mean I have to have a number? Fine, donkey one. So the last digit, if a site says, no, you have to use a digit, most people will throw it on the end of whatever their password was.
Okay.
So okay. Throwing the numbers at the start.
Rather than the end, not beginning or end, just end. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So there are just certain patterns that humans do. And so if you fall into those patterns, your passwords become more guessable because all the password crackers are analyzing these password dumps and figuring out what the average person does. And so the average person throws the numbers at the end. So don't throw them at the end.
Okay.
So anyway, it's an interesting bit of research there. And I'm glad to see that we're not as bad as we thought. I think that's always pleasant. And then a last one that I definitely want to draw people's attention to is that Ars Technica did an article looking at the various VPNs available at the moment, which they have called the State of VPNs in 2016. And so if you're in the market for a VPN or if you have one and you're wondering whether to stick with it or change, you may find this useful.
Cool.
Yeah, there is more stuff there, but I'll leave that to people.
I'm thinking about buying VPN access for a year for each of my kids.
Just to get them into the habit?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was so nice to be on vacation in this hotel we were at in Palm Springs. And just every time I looked at my phone, yep, there's my VPN. And with my Cloak is the one I like, Cloak yeah. VPN on, we were able to stream Game of Thrones from the hotel room without any glitches whatsoever.
Wow, so perfect.
It's not like it slowed us down.
I'm sure it did if you did a speed test, but it didn't slow you down to the point that it wasn't.
That you would notice.
So academically, it must slow you down a little bit.
Yes, I would agree to that.
But you know, in a human sense, it's fine. It is absolutely fine. It's
like, yeah.
You know, technically, this MacBook is slower than this MacBook Pro. Yeah, but I just read email, so it's not right.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's all I have. As I say, something spectacular may have happened between Friday and now, and I won't know about it. But I'll know about it next time.
That's the big ones. Well, it was fun anyway, and I like hearing about your success on exercise. That made it all worthwhile to eat our vegetables here this week.
Yes, and actually I should probably go eat some vegetables now because it's dinner time.
All right, okay. Bro, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Talk to you in a couple of weeks, and until then, stay patched and stay secure.
Well, that's going to wind it up for this week. Don't forget to go to the live chat room on Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific time during WWDC. We'll have like a lot of chat, and that'll be a lot of fun. And you know, we haven't had any dumb questions in a long time. The idea of dumb questions is you write in that question that you think, man, I bet everybody else knows the answer to this, but I don't understand that. How does this thing work? The dumber, the better. I really like the easy ones, the really, really hard ones. I just send people to Matt Geekab. But I really like dumb questions. And remember, any dumb question you have, somebody else probably has the same question. People get a lot out of it. I really encourage you to send those over to me at allison@podfeet.com. You can also send comments and suggestions as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Podfeet and check out the NoSilicast Google Plus community. Getting some good stuff. I posted some stuff there myself today at podfeet.com/Google Plus or the Facebook group, which is on fire. We're having a lot of fun over there. Really, really active group. Not so active that it's annoying, but active enough to be really, really fun. That's at podfeet.com/Facebook. You noticing a pattern here? Podfeet.com/whatever you want. That's how you find it. If you want to join in the fun of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic NoSilla Castaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.